Hey, team of Eternal Optimists, it's Matt Drinkon here. And before we launch into today's epic conversation, I've got a big announcement. Drum roll, please. My brand new book is coming out on March 8th. And perhaps even better news, you can get it for only 99 cents on Amazon that day. We don't run ads on this show. And if you ever want to give back and support the Eternal Optimist community, go to Amazon on March 8th and get the Kindle version for only 99 cents. Just search for the book title, The Eternal Optimist, It's Never Too Late, and you can download it directly to your device. Now, let's get to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Eternal Optimist podcast. I am your host, Matt Drinkon, here for another episode. Yes, we are still here. You keep listening, so we're still here. You know, so we appreciate everyone listening today. We have an exceptional guest today. And when I say exceptional, I mean this man. Not only is he an experienced professional aviator, he is also the reigning pickleball doubles champion of the Front Row Dads annual pickleball tournament. And he's also a good friend and a heck of a human being. He's a dad, a husband. He's awesome. His name's Christian Nyland. Christian, welcome to the show today, sir.
Thank you, Coach Drink. Excited for this, man. I woke up pretty stoked to chat with you today.
Oh, well, heck yeah. Well, then let me ask you this. First of all, when I say that you are the reigning pickleball doubles champion for the Front Row Dads, I'm curious what that might mean to you.
You know what? It just warms my heart that you mentioned that today, because I kind of left that in the dust. That was an easy win for me and my teammate, and we're off to the next championship, which you know will easily repeat, no questions asked. So best of luck to all y'all.
Yeah, maybe so in pickleball. We'll see. I'm looking forward to the golf competition or the billiards competition or anything other than pickleball, which you guys way outmatched everyone. But in any event, it's a real pleasure to see you today. And the format of our show, of course, our mission is to provide hope to others that they can overcome their hard stuff. And I like to ask people the questions, like right out of the gate, ask them about the hardest things they've ever had to endure or overcome. So Christian, where I'd like to start today is, first of all, if you could tell us three bullet points of who is the person that is speaking right now. Just give us a little bit of context. Before I ask you the hard stuff, we go on the rabbit hole. Just give us three bullet points about you that would be good for us to know about Christian the human.
Yeah, great question. Ooh, I think some of the toughest challenges that I've had to overcome through my lifetime that have become very apparent recently through a lot of my therapeutic journey, if you will. The number one thing that I've had struggles with is being my 100% authentic self. And that has led into a lot of different struggles, to include my second bullet point is I went through a pretty rough divorce back in 2019 that was very challenging for me in a lot of different ways. And we can touch on that. But then the third bullet point is most definitely my addiction to alcohol. Those are the three items that come to mind immediately for me as far as struggles in my lifetime. You know, going back to the first bullet point with struggling to be my authentic self, that played such a huge role in a lot of my decision making, who I was up until now, the things that I did that went against my core values. It's been very interesting to pinpoint a lot of those different things as I've been doing the work and trying to connect those different dots as to why I've gotten myself in certain situations. So, you know, it's led right into the topic of my divorce, which really actually opened the door for a lot of the work I'm doing right now, to be honest with you, Matt. It was a moment of, I got myself into this. I made this decision. And I also need to understand my role in that, because I upfront thought that all the fault was on my ex-wife. But in turn, as I started to look within and look myself in the mirror, I realized quickly that I had a huge, huge part in that. And that's been very transformative for me and has catapulted me into a much better, emotionally intelligent position now.
I'm curious. You say that you realize that you played a much bigger part than you originally thought. I'm curious how you came to that realization. Was there a moment that it just hit you and you're like, oh man, a lot of this is me? How did you come to that realization?
I came to that realization of doing a lot of reflection over the years of my marriage, scenarios where I took a very passive approach. And that's been going back to me being my authentic self. I've been so afraid to actually speak up and hold firm on my core values, or just to say what it is that I want and need in a relationship. That was the biggest one. I, over the years, really took a major step back in a passive way, and also used alcohol to just check out of things. You know, if I wasn't being heard or listened to, or my values are being stepped on, I basically became beat down over time and was really afraid to voice what I needed with that oomph and saying, this is me, I need to have this in the relationship. And so that's been the biggest aha moment of, I have been so passive in so many different ways in my life, but whenever I look back on the moments that I haven't been passive, things have worked out tremendously well, where I know with clarity, bang, I want a decision to be made, I want to go this direction, or I need this to happen, that's when I'm at my best. And so it's been so nice to compare and contrast those two situations.
Yeah. Well, if we could take it back a step, you've said being your authentic self. Can you just kind of give us a definition of what do you mean by being your authentic self?
So being my authentic self means that I'm not tempering myself in any fashion. I've been a big people pleaser for my entire life. I want and needed people to like me. And I would go to drastic lengths to make that happen, to include going against and walking away from my true values, my core values, just to make sure that people thought that Christian was a good guy and Christian was cool and he's easy to get along with. And I always prided myself on, I can get along with everyone. But it came with a huge emotional tax. Then you have to temper yourself in certain scenarios where, Matt, if you and I are having a conversation, you know, and you say that golf is better than basketball, the old me would have been like, yeah, you're absolutely right. And come fill in the blank with all the different reasons versus being like, Matt, I totally disagree. I love basketball, which is a total fact, by the way. It's my favorite sport by far. And I would have that conversation with you and I would respect where you're coming from, but I wouldn't hold back on my views when it came to my love for that sport, because that is who I am. And if you don't like me because I like basketball, that's on you. But that has taken a lot of work on my part to even say that out loud today.
Yes, thank you. And this is very interesting for me, dear listeners, to hear Christian say this, because when I met him for the first time at a Front Row Dad's retreat, he was completely transparent, vulnerable, and played the game very real. This is the only version of him that I know. This side that already has worked on this transparency, authentic self, vulnerability, and so the only Christian I know is this. So if you could look at the Christian that you were and then have the Christian that you have evolved into, what might be something in the past Christian that doesn't happen anymore? If we go from the two, what's something in the past that you may have done, but now you don't do anymore? You could tell us.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to your point of the Christian that you know, it's so fun to hear you say that, because I remember meeting you for the first time in Park City. And I will be completely honest with you. I showed up to that event. I almost didn't even show up to the event because I was so concerned with, I was so anxious. I didn't feel like I belonged with this crew, all the above. And so it's neat to hear you say that. So obviously I covered it well. But anyways, the things that the old Christian did that I don't do anymore is I do not allow any scenario or any person to veer me away from my core values. I keep saying core values, but it's been such a huge component of what I have figured out recently is that I thought I didn't know who I was. And I remember voicing this to Phil Stutz at Park City. He asked me, who's Christian? And I couldn't answer the question, but it was strictly because I was too afraid to answer the question. I was too afraid to admit and say with authority who I am. That's the difference. I've always known who I am, but I have allowed external factors to temper who I am. I've questioned myself due to other people or situations. And that's what the old Christian did. I'm at such a good, peaceful state because now I do know who I am and I can go after exactly what it is that I want. And the right people will be right alongside with me in that scenario.
Absolutely. And on the lighter side of things, ladies and gentlemen, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see that Christian is wearing a shirt that has a dog on a skateboard or a dog with sunglasses and, a really cool shirt on here. It says Nike. It's a really cool shirt, but that it takes a degree of confidence to wear that shirt.
Pink. It's a pink shirt. It is pink,
man. I love it. I wonder, because again, the only Christian I know is the one who's been like totally transparent and like just easy to love, easy to be around the whole time. How are you now adjusting to being your authentic self and reclaiming that power? What's the difference like now in your life compared to before?
Oh, it's been incredible. I just notice it through my interactions with other people and the people that have known the old me versus now the new me or the person I've always been. It has just been so noticeable in my relationships and just how I carry myself out in public or even with my kids and, you know, my family. It feels so much lighter now versus I was so just scared to walk the earth, if you will. You know, I just kind of stay in my corner in my bubble, was afraid to go try new things and talk to different people. That's the game changer. I can come forward being my 100% self. And that allows me to then soak up the interactions and situations and experiences around me so much better because I'm not so wrapped up in my head going, oh, I have to protect myself. I don't want people to know who I really am. And that's been so unbelievably refreshing.
Okay. Well, then let me quiz you for a second here. You said basketball is your favorite sport by far. So why basketball and who are your teams?
So second grade, I don't know if you caught this reel that I posted on my Sober Identity page, but it had to do with a picture of me in second grade. And it's a picture of me. I'm wearing a Michael Jordan t-shirt. And on my feet, I've got the Air Jordan 6s, which are by far my favorite shoe. It will always be my favorite basketball shoe. It'll never be topped. I don't care what anybody says. So that's where it began for me. My love for hoops was through Michael Jordan, which I know for a lot of people is the case. But for me especially, I have loved MJ and just everything about that. So, of course, I was a huge Chicago Bulls fan for a long time, had a bunch of Bulls gear. I pay attention to everything with basketball when it comes to both NBA and college. I took a little hiatus off the NBA after Jordan left. But as soon as LeBron came on board, I was right back in it. I watched the first game of his when he played in high school. I was sitting in my dorm room. My jaw fell to the floor. I said to my roommate, this guy is going to be one of the greatest basketball players I've ever seen. And here we are. And here he is, you know, and it's so neat. I just love the sport so much. And I lived in Portland for a bit. So I was a big Blazers fan for a while. I lived in Colorado growing up. So Denver Nuggets, you know, but I'm a fan of the whole spectrum of sports when it comes down to it. But yeah, those would be my teams.
See, when you say Denver Nuggets growing up, I think of like old school. I'm 47 in a week. I think about Alex English wearing that like big bright city color jersey. Yep. I think about Trailblazers. I think about Kevin Duckworth, I want to say is his name. Uh-huh. Terry
Porter?
Terry Porter, man. Terry Porter and Clyde the Glide,
baby. Yeah.
I remember watching those guys. They never could get past, was it Dan Marley and the Suns? Who was it that always beat them? It was somebody.
I might have been the Suns.
I think they made the one finals.
Speaking of which, Matt, you got to see what pants I'm wearing right now. I don't know if you've seen these online.
you got to go to YouTube and check this out.
Bigger than basketball. You got everybody on here, man. I mean, these are legit.
They've got Larry Bird, the greatest smack talker of all time, is on there. We got Magic.
You got everybody.
You got Kareem,
man.
Hakeem Olajuwon. Oh wow, we got.
Yeah.
Wait a second. That's not Bird. That is Bird. That's a young Bird. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, they're pretty sweet. I got a pair of shorts like these exact pair of pants I'm bringing to the Keys. So you'll see those.
So it just goes to show you, ladies and gentlemen, that when you're watching, when you're on the Zoom or on the virtual, you never know what someone's wearing off camera. And Christian's got the most outlandish pants on that have all professional basketball best players in history on them. It's such a cool pair of pants. So I'd love to go back to the third bullet point and talk about alcohol. And this is a special topic to hear you speak about. And I know a lot of people, they take it very seriously. Some it's just, well, we just go a few drinks here and there. And for some, it's just a few drinks every night. And then for some, it's even more out of control. And you know, there's different varying degrees of it. But I'd love to just go back. And if you could help us understand what was your first drink of alcohol, and if you could take it from there and just walk us through your journey, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. So all through high school, I was completely straight edge, huge athlete. I played multiple sports, obviously basketball being my go-to. I never went to parties. I stayed out of that whole scene. I'm not exactly sure why, other than the fact that I love sports so much. I wanted to be at the top of my game when it came to that. So fast forward to our senior trip in high school, we go to Mexico. I'm sitting there with my other good friend of mine at this bar, and he didn't drink all through high school either. We kind of looked at each other as we're watching all these people dancing and drinking and having a good time. And we said, well, should we start drinking? And I've thought about that moment extensively recently. It's painful to think about that moment because, like I said about going against myself, that was the first time that I did. That was the gateway to start doing that. I gave up my power. I gave up my sobriety for no good reason, quite frankly. But I still had really low self-esteem, even though I was a great athlete, everything else. I was a very shy, quiet kid. And so I had succumbed to that pressure. And of course, my first drinking experience actually was a hell of a time. It completely took away my inhibitions and allowed the real Christian to come out. Looking back, Matt, I was dancing on the bar tables. I was talking to anyone and everyone that I could go chat with. Hi, how are you doing? Where are you from? It was the guy that I am now, but at 18 years old. So that was a really slippery slope because now I connected that alcohol and being me needed to be a team. And that's how I lived my life after that. I was really good through college. Honestly, I definitely drank basically like everybody else, but I was really focused on my academics because I wanted to be an airline pilot. I wanted the top grades and I got all that. So it was really neat to see that. But as soon as I got out of the college environment, I got my first flying job. That's when alcohol started to become a problem for me. I started to take it to levels that it shouldn't be taken to. I just loved being the party guy. I was really fun to drink with. People enjoyed that about me. That was my identity. Hence why I've come up with the name Sober Identity, is because that was me for 42 years. Christian drinks. My daughter's name is Stella, and I had buddies think that I named my daughter after the beer. So I started to hear these things, and I started to really deep down in my gut go, I need to temper this. You know, it started when I moved to Portland. I started dating my ex-wife at the time. And I remember her and I, we partied quite a bit. And within a few weeks, I sat her down on my couch and I said, we need to stop drinking so much. I want to stop drinking so much. But in that moment, I was told that that's being too rigid and I want to be able to drink with my boyfriend. And I then questioned myself. And that's another scenario where I'm like, there we go again. Me going against what it is that I'm obviously voicing and want for my core, and now I'm allowing someone else to take me off path. And sure enough, that led to another decade worth of me really, really numbing myself. I was drinking all the time, drinking around my kids. There's a lot of their upbringing that I don't remember too much of. I just wasn't a present father. I was very checked out, and alcohol was always my crutch. And so I just, from there, after my divorce, pushed it really hard through COVID. COVID allowed everybody to pick up drinking. We sat around. What are we supposed to do? Grab the bottle. I'm now allowed to sit and drink because I'm being forced by the outside world. I can't go anywhere. And I got to wear a mask and I don't want to give people COVID or catch COVID. So that ramped up everybody's drinking and certainly mine. I pushed the limits heavy on that because I'm like, oh, cool. The airlines are grounded. I'm sitting around getting paid. I can now do this. And I literally thought I was having the time of my life. And I remember a couple of my friends go basically subtly saying they were concerned for me. And I laughed it off, but I kind of took it in and said, ooh, that's interesting. Someone actually cares about this. Okay. So the real rock bottom point for me was I was dating a gal at the time. It was over 4th of July weekend. We went out to Lake Roosevelt, which is a really nice place around here. And I drank for, I want to say it was 4 days straight, just partied. My parents were watching my girls. I was supposed to come home to then take my girls home. Well, I blew that off because I was on my 4th day of binge drinking And I just told my mom, like, you can handle it. You can deal with it. I just mouthed off to her via text message and even compared her to my ex-wife at the time. And so I woke up the following morning with the worst anxiety I've ever had in my entire life, shaking, you name it. I could barely drive myself to pick up my daughters that day. I walk in the front door at my parents' place and I am just like, I feel it. I feel like the biggest pile of trash I've ever felt like in my life. My poor daughters are looking at me like, you know, you can tell I'm totally wrecked. My mom looked at me just in shock, but she's also like, you're going to take these girls. She didn't say this to me, but later after we talk, it's like, you need to learn a lesson here, which I did. I had them for the rest of that day. They went back to mom's. I called in sick for 11 days of work. I sat on my couch, literally sweating, anxious, withdrawals like no other, the worst stretch of time I've ever experienced in my life. And I said, that's it. I need to sober up. And that kicked off my first stint of sobriety. And that was 4 years ago, give or take.
Wow. Well, for those of us who don't know what that means, withdrawals, what does that look like or feel like to be going through that for that 11 days, Christian?
Oh, it feels like pure hell. Mentally, the best way to describe it is you feel like your entire life is in shambles. Yet everything could be fine. But in your mind, you think that everything is just destroyed. You can't even make the smallest decisions for yourself, like feeding yourself. I remember thinking as I sat on the couch, I'm like, I couldn't even get up to go look in the fridge to go like find something to eat. I was so mentally destroyed. As I'm literally sweating, all I want to do is just have another drink because that's what my body needs to feel normal. And that's a lot of times I'd fight hangovers like that. I'd get up in the morning and just start drinking again because I'm like, I don't want to feel like this. But I said, you know what? You deserve this now. This is your rock bottom moment. So sit with this, which I did. And it took over a week to finally sleep normally. You can't sleep when you're like this. I laid in bed for 11 hours at a time. I woke up. I felt like I'd been up all night. And just tossing and turning, I'm soaked with sweat. It's awful. It is absolutely awful.
Man. Well, thank you for sharing. And by the way, everything you've shared so far, just thank you for having the courage to share it. I'm sure somebody is going to hear this and it's going to make it a huge impact just to hear you share so openly. You know, one of the parts that I actually kind of a tear came to my eye a minute ago, I was thinking about how I feel I let my parents down at one point in my life. And that was like just a big shame or guilt that I carried. And I'm curious to what you can recollect. What did it feel like or what were you thinking when you walked in the door and you looked your mom in the eye?
Oh, I knew. I could tell that my mom was in shock because I've talked to her recently and she never realized how deep in the alcohol that I was. I hit it very well, Matt. I was great at this. I've been a professional drinker my entire life. So many people, you'd never know. I could show up somewhere and you wouldn't even know that I've had 3-4 beers. You know what I mean? So yeah, it was that I knew my mom was shocked. I had so much anxiety going that I just needed the day to end. So I was just like, okay, I'm just pacing around the house. You know, my kids are obviously super stoked to see me. And I'm like, I can't even handle this energy right now. I'm like, I need this day to just be done. And I struggled through every minute of that day. And it was a horrific day. And of course, your kids pick up on this. They, of course, were the biggest pains in the you know what the entire day, because they could just tell that dad was off. And I was. I couldn't even do much of anything. I think we went to the store and that was about it. So I felt so much shame, and even describing it right now, I can visualize that moment and it just makes me feel awful inside. But I'm so grateful to be here right now, 459 days sober, to be able to say that story out loud and be like, I did make the change that I told myself I would in that moment.
Heck yeah. Well, congratulations on the 459. Awesome. This means that I will see you probably right around the 475. So we can celebrate soberly. So excited to do that with you. I'm curious because you did make mention that this was the first time that you became sober. So what happened after that 11-day stretch where you were sober? Take us forward from there, please.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for asking that. So that kickstarted a 6.5 month stretch of sobriety. And it was going great. I was in physically great shape. I spent a lot of time exercising. I kept myself out of the bar scene and just kept myself away from people who would drink. It was going really well. But I got to a point where I told myself that if I can control not drinking, I can certainly control my drinking, is what came to mind. The second thing was that, am I going to enjoy my life fully if I'm completely sober? Can I not have a beer with a buddy? Can I not have a glass of wine? Can I not go on vacation and have a Mai Tai on the beach? That sounds like a bummer of a situation. So I struggle with that. Then I succumbed to it. I just went to the gas station, bought some White Claws and had 2.5 of them. Woke up the next morning, hungover, because my body's like, you haven't had a drink in 6.5 months, buddy. And then I went, within 3 days, I was right back where I used to be with drinking. Within 3 days. And I'm like, uh-oh. So then that went a few months. So this started kind of a back and forth. Let's go back to being sober. Let's go back to drinking. Let's go back to being sober. So I would go 2 to 3 month stretches, and then I'd take a break and I'd drink again. And every time I always regretted it. Every single time. I was like, why? Why can't I stick to this? And I finally answered that question. It's because I was too damn scared to stick to it. I was too fearful of what my life will look like if Christian doesn't drink anymore, because that is my identity. That's what I think and thought that I needed to be me. That was what was tied into different people in my life, friendships and whatnot. Like, I had drinking buddies. What happens if all those things disappear? Am I going to be able to handle that? And for the longest time, the answer was no way. I'm not going to be able to. So I'm just going to keep fighting this inner urge of being sober because I'm too scared to fully commit. And so I woke up on January 1st, 2023. I said, it's going to be an alcohol-free 2023. That was my motto. As soon as I woke up hungover on the 1st, I said, I got to go try this for a whole year. That is my goal. I'm doing it. And everything was going great. I made it 7-8 months. And around that 8 month mark, the questioning came back. I was like, am I being too rigid? Am I going to enjoy this? So on and so forth. And I said to myself, finally, I had to be honest and say, dude, you have told yourself this statement multiple times for years. If you don't give up booze, you'll never live up to your full potential. That was the statement that I had ripping through me for a long time. I would say 15 years. And I always knew it. I'm like, I've accomplished a lot. But imagine if you got rid of alcohol, what you could do. And I will tell you right now, Matt, the fact that I'm sitting here on the Eternal Optimist podcast speaking to a man of your caliber tells me everything. Gives me goosebumps just saying that out loud. I am doing it now. It damn near brings me to tears when I say that. This year and a half for me has been unfucking believable. I'm just riding the wave, and I know why it's happening. It's because there's no more alcohol. I'm finally being me, and there's no more booze anchoring me to the bottom of the sea. And that is why I tell my story to everybody, because I want others who feel the same way to know you can change this. And if and when you do, be ready for every positive, magical moment for the rest of your life, because it's all waiting there for you. I am telling you, it's all there for the taking. Just take this plunge, get rid of the booze. You'd be amazed.
Fantastic. I want to connect the dot here first. I am incredibly humbled and appreciative of your story and your statement to be on our show. We love you on the show. Your story, it's got me enthralled. Something you just said, you have a daughter named Stella, and I have had a can of Stella beer in my fridge for over a year and a half. I've not had it, not drank it. And I finally, 2 days ago, poured it out, and I videoed me pouring it out because I'm also on an alcohol-free journey with you, my friend. So I finally poured that out. It makes me smile to think, because it doesn't have any grip over me either, not anymore. So I'm glad to be talking with you about it.
Yeah, I know, Matt, you've been doing this. And I've been so curious on how that's been going for you. And it just, I'm so stoked for you and proud of you, and keep it going. There's no benefit to having alcohol in your life. And I think once you get going on this and you start to see, like, wow, I can live my life without alcohol, it's game on, because now you've opened up all this mental bandwidth. Because anytime we're subject to, should I drink? How much should I drink tonight? Did I drive? Did I not? Should I drive after I drink? What happens after this? There is so much mental ping pong going back and forth that we do not realize when alcohol is now present in your situation. And so when you can completely chuck that out the window, it's so great. And imagine for your kiddos. I've had wonderful discussions with both my daughters when it comes to alcohol. I finally told them the other day, I said, girls, I want to find a woman who does not drink. And my oldest, without skipping a beat, goes, wow, daddy, that's going to be really hard to find. And I went, that just goes to show that alcohol is everywhere. And even little kids, an 8-year-old child has that opinion on finding someone who doesn't drink. That's really scary. And so for dads like us to be able to present and have that ability to teach our kids about the dangers of alcohol, and for you to be that role model, for them to be able to utter the words, my dad doesn't drink, how powerful is that statement for a father and for other people around to go, what? Like, wait, your dad doesn't, you mean he doesn't drink beer? How can he not drink beers? Like, all guys drink beer. No, my dad doesn't drink. All he drinks is bubbly waters. That was a statement my daughter told some people the other day. And I just, it just lit me up. I'm like, awesome. She's paying attention. And we've had wonderful chats. So that's another huge, huge reason to do it.
Yeah, I love that reason too. I like to think about when I'm drilling in the morning, like all the stuff that I'm doing, I'm modeling for them and their sponges, just soaking it all up. So what is it that I'm modeling when it comes to, well, alcohol, right? And there was times when they'd see that there's a bottle of wine on the countertop there at night, next morning, it's not there anymore. And that happened many, many cycles. So I think about it now and I feel that the social lubricant, everyone else was doing it. I didn't start till college, day 3 of college, to be precise. Never had a drink in my life until then. And I remember that first drink. It was Milwaukee's Best Light, the Beast. I was on a couch in college. And I remember that started a kind of a binge drinking place on the weekends. You know, it was a Friday and Saturday night binge, kind of like a buffet, drink all you can. And that was 4 years of college. And then I got to play businessman entrepreneur for 5 years. And same thing, weekend party. I kept it to that. But also, there was always a mental haze of sorts going into the new week. I didn't like that. But it didn't really bother me in my 20s. But then when I had kids in my 30s, it was like, wait a second, I don't want to model this anymore. So we mostly stopped drinking, but now we've totally cut it out. And I wonder now, at what point did I gain the inner self-confidence to not need the social lubricant of alcohol anymore? Because now we don't see the sense in doing it because it just simply costs money and it doesn't make me healthier. That's the lens now. So yeah, those are some thoughts that come to me about it. But Julie and I both, my wife and I both are alcohol free now and glad to hear you are. So I'm curious, what's next in your world? What is the passion that you're running towards right now that it's your big why, Christian?
Yeah. So I had an amazing epiphany. This was late January. I was racking my brain on finding that purpose. You know, I go back to Front Row Dad Live where Ryan Levesque did his speech and presentation talking about the book, The Second Mountain. And I love his presentation on that, just resonated with me so, so well. Because I've accomplished a lot of neat things. I've owned a business. I got my dream career. I've got all these things. Yet it leaves this level of emptiness. And I was like, oh my God, this book is the ticket. So I started reading this book and trying to find my second mountain. My second mountain, what's that going to be? And it hit me. In fact, it brought me to tears when I figured this out. And that was, I want to help people to become sober. I want to coach people to become sober. I want to spread my story to anyone and everyone who's listening. I want to help others rid themselves of this toxic substance because I have watched people very close to me, including family members, have their lives ruined by alcohol. And I almost ruined mine. I will say that until I'm dead. I was this close, Matt, to ruining my life because of this substance. So this is my calling. This is my passion, without a doubt. I'm pouring my heart and soul into this. As you can see with the content I'm creating, and obviously my coaching business essentially is called Sober Identity, because I tied that in. I said, gosh, what's the perfect name for doing this? It's Sober Identity, because my identity was wrapped up in booze. So how cool is that? Let me help others find their sober identity. Who are you without alcohol? Who can you become without alcohol? what's your potential look like if you rid yourself of booze? I can talk about this subject all day long. I'm so passionate about it. And it's because that's who I was up until my senior trip in Mexico. I gave it up. I don't ever regret that because that has brought me to where I'm at now. That has solidified my true passion of Christian is built to be a sober man. That's what I figured out. It was amazing. Just tears of joy when I figured that out. I was sitting on a therapy call. I've got video footage of my call and I just completely lost it. Tears of happiness, just everything. And that's when you know, when you start doing this emotional work, when things hit you that hard, that means that's you. If something brings on that level of emotion, that is who you are. And you have to listen to that stuff. You got to listen to your body. And anytime I bring up sobriety and people ask me, it's like I'm floating off the floor. I gain energy. I start to just talk nonstop. You know, I'll talk anybody's ear off on this subject because it's that important to me. So yeah, I can't wait. I'm putting this thing together slowly and I'm just having so much fun with it because I just love being able to spread that message. And I'm hoping that people that are watching who are on the fence going, I know I need to change. I know I need to change. And if my content daily can keep pulling them up closer to that decision, then that is everything to me.
I promise you that it will, because it did. I had another guest on, I believe it was an episode of December of 2022. Kay Allison was her name, and she wrote a book called Juicy AF, Juicy Alcohol Free. And my wife read the book, got the journal, and that inspired or helped her in her journey become alcohol free, right? So I know that people listen, and I know that somebody will be impacted. And whoever does hear this today, please reach out to me, reach out to Christian, let us know. Not because it's going to stroke our ego, because we want to know that you're okay. We want to know that you found something. And if you want to talk to someone about it, then that is what Christian is doing. He's got a coaching business or developing his coaching business, Sober Identity. So speaking of that, Christian, is there a place we can find you? Like, what are the most important places we can find you on social media or connect with you?
Yeah. So the easiest spots, the number one spot is through Instagram. So just look up Sober Identity, one word. Follow my page. You can reach out to me directly through that page. Otherwise, I've got a Facebook page that's also titled Sober Identity. Another way to contact me there too. So those are my two outlets right now where I'm posting content every single day. I try to come up with something every single day just to make sure that the support is there, because that is vital. That was something that I basically white knuckled my sobriety journey. I wish I would have leaned on a lot more of the people in the sober community, because now that I have the Sober Identity page, I'm meeting all kinds of wonderful people in the community that support you and want you to succeed. So if you're on the fence, just start by following as many of these pages as you can, not just mine. Find every sober page, every sober person you can get your hands on, and just have that rolling through your feed as constant reminders. It's wonderful. So when you're having that moment or a day where you're on the fence, like, am I making the right call? Or I really want to drink right now. Spend 20 minutes going through there, reach out to someone. And before you know it, you're right back on track. So it's completely vital.
Yeah. Is that something that now you've made this transition, you've made the commitment, you're 459 days in, is there still a chance that you might relapse and go back to alcohol? I mean, is there still a trigger point in there, or are you... I don't know if that's the right question to ask. I'm not sure what to ask, Christian, but I'm curious how your relationship is with thinking about alcohol now. And yeah, just if you could talk on that, please.
Yeah, absolutely. My answer to that is, as I stand right now, there's no way in hell I'm going to relapse. Zero chance. And I know people that are in the sober community may see that and hear that and say, be careful with that statement. That to me, I'm saying that because that's who I am. I was always that guy. I never wanted to drink. I never did. Now that I've fully committed and I've seen that it's okay to fully commit to that, I don't even have any NA beers anymore. I don't have anything that's a supplement to, I need to have a drink at the end of my day, or, I had a stressful day. Let me go to a drink or some sort of comfort there. I tried that for a bit. It wasn't for me. I've got some NA beers that, like your bottle of Stella in the fridge, that's going to be the same thing. I've got Stella NA sitting in my pantry. I'm never going to crack that. Maybe if someone else wants one, but that's me. That's my personal choice. And I know there's a lot of people I've chatted with who either are sober now or are considering it. They always say, well, I'm never going to say never. Like, they always leave that door cracked. And I wonder why, you know, I wonder why is it not okay to just fully commit to something that is this positive in your life? That's always going to be a question that I will ask people that I coach. Why do you want to keep the door cracked? What is scaring you from making this 100% final, you're done drinking and life moves on? But I can relate to that because it took me a while to get to that point because of the fear there of, ooh, I am now an outsider. I always felt like in a bar setting or in a group of drinkers, I don't drink, like the spotlight comes on. Psh, let's ask this idiot why he doesn't drink, you know? And then you're like, oh, but it's because I don't. But now I've gotten past that too. And that takes a little bit of time, but I will never pick up another drink. That is what I tell myself every day.
Got it. Good. Well, thank you. I would love to kind of move into our wrap up part here. This has been exceptional. I know that our listeners are going to get a ton of value from it, and they have already. I still have some ding, 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 lightning round questions for you, Christian. So let's go into lightning round here. I'm thinking about changing the name from lightning round to the octagon. Let's walk into the octagon here. And the first question would be, if you are a music person, then what would be a song or a genre or an artist that inspires you or fills your bucket?
Oh, electronic music, hands down. I started listening to Daft Punk in high school, and I've never looked back. People in high school made fun of me for listening to that kind of music, and now I think it's hilarious because EDM is huge now, and there's so many cool genres that I can go on and on about. But yeah, electronic music, no question. That's 90% of what I listen to.
Love it. Yeah, me too. I love it. That's great. How about books? If there is one or maybe up to three books that you found value in, what might be one to three book recommendations?
Ooh, The Second Mountain, like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, that's a great one. Arete by Brian Johnson. Picked that up at Front Row Dad Live. I love it. I read that just 3-4 pages before I go to bed every night. It just keeps you motivated. It's an awesome, awesome book.
I'm glad you said that Arete book with Brian Johnson, because I had not had the pleasure of meeting him yet, but he is scheduled for the show and he sent me a copy of the book and a really cool like book box and whatnot. So looking forward to meeting him. So thank you. And last question. This is the Eternal Optimist podcast. And when I say the words eternal optimist, what might that mean to you?
I love that that's been the name of your podcast. I so resonate with it because overall in my lifetime, I've always been an optimist. And I've been surrounded by pessimistic people that have told me, I had some people tell me not to get into the airline career because of 9/11. Because right as I started flight training was right when 9/11 hit. So I had people around me go, why in the world would you go become an airline pilot after what just happened? Again, pessimism over optimism. Anything that I've done, I've always led with an optimistic standpoint, and it has always worked out for me. And I've watched others who are pessimists. Everything goes wrong for them. Everything. And I'm like, there's a correlation here. And so optimism, I live my life with optimism. I've always done that. And so it's so cool that that's what you've used for your business.
Awesome. Thanks, brother, for the stories. We appreciate you. Love you. And look forward to hearing more of the story when we have the second episode here in the next year or so. So thank you, Mr. Christian Nyland. Last word to you. Any word of wisdom, advice, quote, just anything to end on. I'll give you the last word, Christian.
Quotes. One, I just posted this on my page. The magic is in the work you're avoiding. This plays into your entire life. It's one of my all-time favorite quotes. I use it all the time because it's so true. It's been that case for me, and I've watched others the same thing. When you do the hard work or the things that you don't want to do, right? Go to the gym. You want to get in shape. You got to go to the gym. You avoiding that? Is your health in shambles? Are you avoiding that? Are you avoiding that tough conversation with yourself or with someone else in your life? We avoid all kinds of stuff, but if you attack that head on, the magic starts to happen.